Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry.
This world is not my home, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue.
The purpose of the Bible on Trial, as created by Rich Humple, is to compare the current beliefs of Christianity to the actual words and teachings of Jesus Christ as he gave them to his own eyewitness disciples, and then discover if there are any differences.
Oh Lord, you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door.
Now join the Spirit of Truth Ministry team for an eye-opening hour of investigation as we search for truth by putting the Bible on trial. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry. Today is the first day of spring, March 20, 2015, and we are delighted that you are here with us today. We are also interested in letting you know that today is the first day of the beginning of God's year, and there is a very good reason for that. That is because tonight is a new moon, and the God's year starts
today. Is a solar eclipse,
and God's year starts on the spring equinox on
the first day of the first month of the new year.
It's the first day of the first month of the new year, and we can explain that a little bit later if you'd like. We can get into timing if you'd like. That's always an interesting subject. We are expecting great things to be happening here very shortly from the standpoint of how God gets the message that we are talking about here on this program out to the world. And we are glad that right now that you are part of that, and part of it a little bit early, and it's nice. We encourage you to go over to our chat room. I will be monitoring the chat today, and you can chat in with either comments or questions. Better yet, today is an open line day, so if you'd like to, you can come over from the website on Blog Talk Radio. You can call in to our call-in numbers, and we would be delighted to talk to you to field your questions or comments. Our guest call-in number is 646-716-8390, and our 800 number, for those of you who are using ground lines, it is 877-903-3193. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Suzette.
Morning.
Good morning, Dr. Don.
Good morning.
And good morning, Rick. We will start here in just a second, but let's have prayer first. Father in heaven, we have many things to be thankful for. We are thankful for this beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, sunny Southern California day, and we commiserate with all of those lovely people who are in places in the world where they're freezing their tuchus off, and we appreciate the care that you've given all of us in protecting us as we go about our daily business. I pray, Father, that you will, in your mercy, grant us peace, safety, and an understanding mind and an open heart as we listen to your words, the words of Jesus Christ that he gave to his eyewitness disciples, as we listen to the words that you gave through the law and through the prophets in the Old Testament. And I pray that as we go through today, you will keep these things in our minds and in our hearts, and allow us to share them with those whom you place before us. I pray now also for Judy, who is a friend of ours, who is struggling not only with her Crohn's disease, but with some other personal issues. And I pray, Father, that you will bless her mightily with the funds and the abundance that she needs to do your will in this world. And I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, hey, we're here.
Yep.
Again.
Yeah, tomorrow, Dennis is going on a little trip.
I'm taking a literal sabbatical. A one-day sabbatical with my family. We're going to go down to La Jolla and San Diego. We're going to meet up with my son and his girlfriend, and my daughter and her boyfriend are coming down. We're all bringing our dogs, and we're going to go to a dog beach down there and let the dogs run around and play.
The dog days of spring.
It's absolutely the dog days of spring. And we are going to have a great time. I will be listening on my cell phone on the way down, if I'm not already there. And I will be going over tonight over to Rick's place, and I'm going to be setting up all of this studio so that you
hopefully it'll work all right tomorrow.
Otherwise,
I'll be using my cell phone.
And I will be setting it up so that, and if we can just plug this in and leave it, and then all you have to do is open things up and everything should work fine.
We can.
Hey, it works for me. I don't mean to be indispensable either, but it is kind of nice to know that
you need to teach one of us how to do it.
That's right. Good morning, Larry. I think Larry is listening from down the hill. So let's get started with this. I would really like us to discuss for a couple of minutes how God's timing works in the year. We talked about this being the first day of spring. This is indeed the first day of God's year.
Well, it's actually, for me, the fifth rule of apocalyptic prophecy
right, exactly.
Interpretation.
Right.
Which dawned on me as I was driving home from a Thursday night study a number of years ago. And the fifth rule of apocalyptic prophecy interpretation goes something like this. When God delivers timing information, He means it to remain fixed in the type given. In other words, if He says months, He doesn't want you to change months into days and days into years. If He gives it in years, He doesn't want you to change years into days and days into months or what have you. Because if you leave it just as it is given, where a month starts on a new moon and ends on the next new moon, where the next month starts, that is a month. You don't change months into days. A month is approximately 29 and a half days. But God never established the sun and the earth in a 24-hour day to calculate a month. That's what He made the moon for, and its name indicates.
Would you like me to read it as it is published on our original website located at spiritoftruthministry.net/SM? Here it is. It's number 5 in the article. It is the 7 rules of prophetic interpretation. These are based on what Rick came up with. It was about 2007 or something like that. Been a while.
Earlier than that.
It's earlier than
more
that.
More in the late 90s.
I don't
1990s.
Know. But here it is. Number 5. A year is one rotation of the earth around the sun, calculated as beginning at the spring equinox.
In the northern hemisphere.
In the northern hemisphere. At the half year occurs on the fall equinox. Months are calculated from the lunar cycle and begin on the new moon and end the day before the next new moon. Weeks begin on the first day of the week, Sunday, and end on the seventh day of the week, Sabbath. A day is the rotation of the Earth around its axis in 24 hours. And all of these, and I'm adding this as an addendum, all of these are immutable and do not change because of a listing in prophecy. And you know that because of this. Number one, all prophecy has a beginning and ending point in time. Elements within a prophecy are consecutive and occur in chronological order. So if you have to change months into years and days into weeks and weeks into months and do all of this changing to prove your prophetic timing calculations, then what you are doing is you are changing what God has established. When God said new moon to new moon, he was not talking about a 31-day or 28-day month. We have gotten to the place where we cannot think in terms of calendar events outside of the Julian calendar. That's what we're used to. We're used to sun. We're used to the day beginning at 1 second after 12 midnight. Okay, that's how we live.
Yeah.
All right. The problem is that's not how God designed timing to operate. And so, for instance, number two, in order for a prophetic fulfillment to occur, all elements of the prophecy must occur as stated within the prophecy. This precludes partial or multiple fulfillments or types of fulfillments. So when you look at a prophecy in Daniel 9:24, and you see that God said to Daniel on behalf of Israel, this is for your people and for your holy city. He's not talking about now any, you know, God is not talking about himself in relationship to anybody in Israel because he's declaring it, he's out of it now. Anything that follows has to be declared in those timing issues, a year for a day, because the restoration calendar was still in functioning. So I highly recommend you go there. This you can get there by going spiritoftruthministry.net/STM. Then you click on must read, go to the archive, and scroll down until you see this title, Seven Rules of Prophetic Interpretation. There is also an explanation down below for these seven rules. So we give the seven rules, and then we explain how they operate. And it's fascinating. It really is. And if you look at it this way, it clears up so much. You don't have to worry about if there's a lot of people in this day-year bit that is declaring, well, you know, it doesn't work out to be 365 days. It actually works out to be 360 because, you know, there's always this leap year and we've got this short month and we've got this long month. They're trying to fit it into our current understanding of how calendars and clocks work. Now, I have a question for you guys. Upon what day did God set the clocks?
Wednesday.
To zero. Wednesday of what?
Creation week.
Wednesday of creation week. But I thought it said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But what does in the beginning mean? In the beginning of what? You see, how does God establish a beginning if there has never been a beginning before?
And why does an infinite God who lives outside of time decide to create a timepiece for a planet of his creation?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you come up with Wednesday?
The fourth day of
the
week.
The fourth day of the week.
Wasn't Wednesday.
It wasn't Wednesday.
They didn't call it Wednesday. It was called the fourth
day. It is the Wednesday day. It's the fourth day of the week.
Fourth day, okay.
And I also find it fascinating that people will say, well, Jesus, you know, never meant for Israel to not fulfill whatever it was that Israel was supposed to fulfill. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the final week of that 490-week period, the last week of that, and we're going to divide that in half. And Jesus died in the middle of that, and so we're going to take the remaining part of that and we're going to move it down to the end of time.
Because it was cut off.
Because it was cut off. Hmm. And we're going to move it down to the end of time, so there's 3.5 years at the end of time when whatever...
7 years.
Well, it's a seven-year...
They actually cut off the seven
They cut off years. The whole 7 years.
Yeah.
And so what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, since Jesus, you know, it obviously it didn't work out completely like Jesus wanted it to work out, so he's going to do it all at the end of time. And he's going to use Israel because he has to use Israel because Israel is the kingdom of heaven, always will be God's chosen people from now until eternity.
But see, in order to believe that, they have to then ignore a very clear statement by the angel Gabriel that said 70 sevens have been decreed for your people and your holy city.
Mm.
Well, if you cut off the 70th week and put it down at the end of time, how many sevens does that involve? Well, I don't know, but way more than 70.
Mm.
So it is not the 70th week that is cut off. It is the prince who is cut off.
Exactly.
And has nothing.
Yes. And see,
wow.
Timing, and the reason why people don't know this, and all of us around this table have experienced this, people have been taught not to even think about studying timing or the timing of events. Because just as Christians make use of a single verse in the Bible as the basis for their entire theology, and that would be John 3:16. And if you ask any Christian what verse is the most important verse to them, I would guess 9.9 times out of 10, they will say John 3:16.
And it's probably the one verse in the Bible that every Christian can recite from memory.
Every Christian, exactly.
Yeah.
And now, especially if you're talking with the group of people that we came out of, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Seventh-day Adventists got caught up in a timing problem.
Well, they were born out of a timing.
Well, they were born out of timing, but they got caught up in a timing problem because the timing didn't work out the way they thought it should. They didn't understand what it was that was actually happening, and so they have declared there is no timing to be studied or learned about after this happens. Nothing.
After 1844.
After 1844, there is nothing that we can do about it. We shouldn't even talk about it. And they cite a particular and singular verse, and that is Matthew 24:36.
Well, and their accepted prophetess also says the same thing.
Right, and she cites Matthew 24:36.
Right.
That is, no one knows the day or the hour, not the Son, not the angels in heaven, not the Son, but the Father only.
And you see, that's not what the verse says.
That's exactly not what the verse says. In fact,
that's how they recite it, but that's not what it says.
But, and again, here is, and I term her Aunt Ellen. Here's Aunt Ellen, who says that yes, we should not study timing, and yet her very husband wrote a paper called Matthew 24, and in it, he makes a determinant statement about the word no there.
K-N-O-W.
K-N-O-W, the word no. No one knows the day or the hour when the Son of Man is going to come. He points out that that word in Greek means, literally, to make known. To make known. No one makes known or reveals the day and the hour of the coming, not the angels in heaven, not the Son, but the Father only. It is only the Father that makes known the day, and that's what that verse says. But people say, no one will ever know, because it's if you try to do that, you're going against the will of God. That's exactly what you were talking about, Rick, earlier, when you were talking about what how the Apostle Paul views pagans, views the nations, in relationship to God's plan for redemption. He says that the pagans were never included. And it is only after Jesus Christ died that pagans, the nations, became included in the process for becoming redeemed.
Which is a lie that is so easily exposed. Well,
and you just exposed it, right. And we can do that maybe a little bit later. I think that would be fascinating. But the reason why I'm saying this is because people do not choose to investigate and find out what these texts really mean. All they do is they believe whoever it was that God put in the pulpit, whoever it was that God wrote for their
church, accepts Paul as a valid apostle of Jesus Christ, then that's good enough for them. So you don't go and do an investigation to see whether Paul is in fact an apostle.
Right. As it, by the way, as it says in
because then you're
Revelation 2,
God.
Yeah. 1, as, you know, as it says in Revelation 2, 1, about testing those who call themselves apostles.
Right.
You see?
And I said that there's only one apostle in the New Testament who calls himself an apostle.
Right.
And that's Paul.
And none of the other people who either were eyewitnesses or who wrote ancillary or secondary to the Gospels, that is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, not even Luke, who got all of his information from
Luke
Paul.
Luke never identifies himself as a writer.
That's right. In fact, none of the Gospel writers identify who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that there are differences because of the vast differences between what Luke wrote and what the other three wrote.
Right.
But the fact is this. Look, God set the clocks in motion on a particular day of creation at an exact time when everything was 000. The days, the months, the years, the seconds, the hour, all were at zero. And those clocks started exactly at the right time.
And it's my belief that on the fourth day of the creation week, that zero time was what we're experiencing today.
Today! That's what I was pointing out.
It's a spring equinox. Mm-hmm. It's a new moon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solar eclipse.
Wow.
You see, and by the way, the solar eclipse is part of that zero time.
Time, yeah.
You see? Because the moon has to be juxtaposed exactly in front of
the sun.
At exactly the right time. Now, is there significance to this? Well, we can talk about that. So, I urge you, dear listener, to go to our other website, the original website, and I will post that up on the chat room. In fact, I will even go and get the link, and I will link it onto our chat page, and you can then link on it and take a read, and I think it will be just terrific for you.
Along with that fifth rule, of course, there are seven, as I understand it. I'm not saying that there are only seven. I'm not saying that there are seven in total or You know, there could be one, two, or three, or four. But what I recognize as God has given information on how apocalyptic prophecy is calculated in time, or the time calculations. First of all, if God did not want us to go there, now what I mean is to figure out time, then God would not have given time at all. Because all that does is tempt someone to try and figure out, well, what does God mean when he says 1,290 days from the taking away of the continual until the abomination of desolation is set up will be 1,290 days. So, does God expect us to ignore that? Because we're not supposed to know anything about time. In fact, trying to know something about time is a sin in itself to a lot of people. And you're a date setter.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Wow. But listen to this. This is found in Revelation 10, 2, 3, and 4. There is a being that a mighty angel. Well, verse 1. I saw another mighty angel coming down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was on his head, and his face was like the sun, and his feet like pillars of fire. He had a little book open in his hand, and he set his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land, and cried with a loud voice as when a lion roars. When he cried out, seven thunders uttered their voices. Now, when the seven thunders uttered their voices, I was about to write them down, what he said. But I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, seal up the things which the seven thunders uttered and do not write them. Now, why do you think God, this voice came out and said, don't write those things? Because it was not time for their understanding. Will we understand what the seven thunders are? I think we already do. This is my personal opinion, not based on anything except how I understand things. But we go back to Revelation 1, 1, 2, 3, 1, 1 through 3. And verse 3 says this, blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy. Now, is what we just read in Revelation 10 included in that prophecy? Yes, it is. Okay. And keep those things that are written in it. Keep them? Another word for that is, how would you keep something you didn't understand? Well, you'd have to understand it in order to keep it.
Exactly, otherwise...
So what my understanding is at the appropriate time and the appointed time of the end, we will understand what the seven thunders are. For the time is near.
What's that text again?
Which one?
The last one, Revelation.
Revelation 1, 3.
1 through 3?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you're...
Keep.
Oh, keep. That is 3, verse 3. And keep those things.
1, 3.
Revelation 1, 3. Heed, pay attention to. If you don't understand what it is, how can you pay attention to it?
Yeah, exactly.
And then he says, for the time is near. For the time, for what time? The time when these things will be useful.
Right.
So, in my way of thinking, what kind of statement would the understanding of time make to the church? It would set people's heads a spin. It would put many, many prophetic writers out of business. I think it is incredibly important to And I am just going to say it out loud. I think that the seven thunders that John heard were the seven rules of prophetic interpretation that we have written on our website.
Wow.
Because how are you going to understand what God means until you understand the language?
Right.
If you don't understand the language, you can never understand what God means. Does God give prophecy so we don't understand it?
No.
Now, he gives prophecy so certain people won't understand it.
Right.
And who won't understand the actual true understanding and meaning of end time prophecy? Those who believe they already know.
Yeah.
Well, there's that other text. He said,
go ahead and pull that a little closer.
Only my sheep know my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're not a sheep, you won't.
You won't hear anything.
And you can go into Revelation 3 too, and you hear, you see that, and you pointed this out too, Don. I stand at the door and knock.
Yeah.
Anyone who hears me knocking.
Open a door.
Right. Is that what it says?
Wrong answer.
No. What's it saying?
If anybody hears my voice.
Yes. And so.
And what comes from the voice?
Words.
Yeah. Words.
That. To me, that's a powerful text.
That is Revelation 3:20, by the way. It says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in." By the way, active. You have to open the door.
Oh, but that's...
But see, what if you don't recognize Jesus' voice because you don't know his words?
Yeah. You don't open the door.
You don't open the door. I am terrified. I'm not going to open the door to you. Right. And so Jesus is left standing out. And is he going to stay at that door? Is he going to stay at your door long?
Nope.
How many chances do you have to open that door?
One chance.
One chance.
That's it.
So, does that make any sense?
Yes. Interesting.
Interesting, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And so, hang on here. I'm going to go to this, and I'm going to just quick, like, while we've got a minute, I'm going to read something to you. I'm going to read, in order, the seven rules of prophetic interpretation. 1. All prophecy has a beginning and ending point in time. Elements within the prophecy are consecutive and occur in chronological order. In other words, God knows what he's talking about. Don't interpret that.
Yeah.
Don't
try to reinterpret it.
Don't say that this has to come before that when it doesn't say that.
Yeah.
2, in order for a prophetic fulfillment to occur, all elements of the prophecy must occur as stated within the prophecy. In other words, in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
This precludes partial fulfillments or multiple fulfillments or types of fulfillments. 3, the interpretation for a symbol will be given within the prophecy. If no interpretation is given, then the symbol is to be taken literally. And we see this discrepancy between Daniel and Revelation all the time. Because people will say, look, it's the same thing just because it says there's heads and horns and crowns. Okay, as long as it's got heads and horns and crowns, it's the same thing. But in Daniel, it specifies how many heads, how many crowns, how many horns.
Mm-hmm.
In Revelation, it specifies how many heads, how many crowns, how many horns. And if they don't match exactly, they're not the same thing. But people say they are the same thing. You see, they declare just because it's got heads and horns, it's got a match. Okay? 4, timing within the restoration calendar, that is the Jubilee calendar. You can find that calendar listed in Leviticus, notably chapter 25. Timing within the restoration calendar is given in day years. One day equals 1 year. Timing, listen, this is critical. Timing after the expiration of the restoration calendar is literal. So if, and that statement is loaded, because that means you have to know when the restoration calendar ended. Oh, but nobody can know time. Nobody can study time. Nobody can understand this. Yeah, right. If you don't understand it, how do you know when you are in time? Jesus even said, when the time comes for him to appear and for all of these things to occur, it will be like a twig on a tree turning supple and getting flexible.
Dennis.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Those people who, well, I say those people, everybody that I talk to say nobody knows the time. Even Jesus doesn't know the time.
Yes.
So you know what I ask them? Well, how then is he supposed to know when it's time for him to come back for us? Because only the Father knows, and he's not telling anybody. So it's a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
We're here waiting for Christ to come. Christ is up there waiting to come, but he can't come because he doesn't know the time that the Father has set him to come.
And even Jesus can't know that time.
But the Father can't tell Jesus because Jesus isn't supposed to know the time, just like we're not supposed to know the time. None of the angels are supposed to know the time. So it's like the Father knows the time, and he's not telling
anybody. And they thoroughly misread Revelation 1:1-3. They thoroughly misread that. Number five, time elements. And we went through this. A year is one rotation around the earth, of the earth around the sun, calculated at the beginning as the spring equinox. The rule, by the way, about that is that the year that God establishes starts on the first new moon on or following the spring equinox.
Well, that's the first month.
That's the first month. That's the beginning of the month.
The year starts on the spring
equinox. The year starts on the spring
equinox. In the northern hemisphere.
The year always starts on the spring equinox, but the first month starts on the first new moon on or following the spring equinox. So on the fourth day of creation, the first new moon started on the spring equinox. That was the first day of the year, the first day of the first month, the first day of that first week. All right. So let me get back here. The half year occurs on the fall equinox. That makes sense, doesn't it? 6 months later?
Mm-hmm. Which is like a day because the day starts at twilight or sundown,
sunset.
And a half day, the day part of the day starts at dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But the whole day starts at sundown. Twilight at sunset and ends at twilight sunset on the next day.
Months are calculated from the lunar cycle,
mm-hmm.
and begin on the new moon and end the day before the next new moon. Weeks begin on the first day of the week, Sunday, and end on the seventh day of the week, Sabbath. By the way, that is immutable. It doesn't matter whether you decide that you're going to start your day on Sunday, your week on Monday, or and end it on Sunday. It has nothing to do with that. In God's calendar, it always starts on the first day of the week and ends on the seventh. The day is a rotation of the earth around its axis in 24 hours. Do you have to be a solar scientist to understand this stuff? No. All you have to do is look at the sun, look at the moon, look at the stars.
Look at the sun. We don't encourage you.
No. But look at the location of the sun during the day. I mean, you know, you can see it. You can see its results. Okay, number six, time-specific prophecy. Certain prophecies or elements of prophecy have a specific time for their understanding. Okay. You have Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, just before the Civil War. And an angel comes and stands before him and says, What kind of information do you think that Abraham Lincoln would want from an angel if he knows that there's war coming and he's going to have a major part in this? What kind of information do you think Abraham Lincoln would have wanted from an angel? He would have wanted information about the Civil War, about his role in it, but that's not what the angel came to tell. He came to tell him that in, you know, about 100 years, there's going to be about 80 years or so, there's going to be a world war. It's going to be World War II. There's going to be another war before that, too, but I'm not telling you about that one. I'm going to tell you about World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Of what use would it be to Abraham Lincoln?
None.
Zero. In fact, it would be confusing. It would be worthless. So that the same thing goes for biblical, that is, end time prophecy. God gives end time prophecy only to those people who are going to participate in its fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
All right? These prophecies can be read anytime, but the understanding of the interpretation of these prophecies is sealed up until a specific time has been reached.
If a prophecy is sealed.
If a prophecy is sealed up. Okay? By the way, sealing doesn't mean that you can't read it. Okay, you can read the prophecy all you want. The understanding will not come to anybody. And this is why
it's rule seven.
That's rule seven. That's rule seven, but we'll get to that in just a second. Before these prophecies are unsealed, that is, understood at this specific time, it is impossible for them to be understood and or accurately interpreted. So it doesn't matter whether you're the most brilliant theologian in the world and the most brilliant prophetic exegesis person in the whole world. If it's not time for you to understand it, you won't.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, only the wise will understand. Both the time when the prophecy is unsealed and the accurate interpretation of the prophecy when it is unsealed. And you can see that in Daniel 12, 9, and 10. Now, timing important to God.
Yes.
We're coming up on one of the most arguably the most poignant, personal, and important season of the Christian liturgical year.
Hmm.
And that is Easter. What would happen to the Christian church if they understood the real, literal, provable time when Jesus was resurrected? In order to know that, you'd have to know exactly when he died. You'd have to know what year it was that in which he died. You'd have to know all sorts of
pertinent
timing information. And what if it was different than what you believe?
Oh, heaven forbid.
Well, then it's got to be wrong.
Yeah, totally.
You see,
kind of puts a monkey wrench in it.
If you are a Christian, even if you are a Sabbath-keeping Christian, either a Seventh-day Adventist or Seventh-day Baptist, or anyone who's, let's say, independent of a church that just happens to believe that the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God, in it thou shalt do no work, etc. Okay? If it can, Christians believe that Jesus Christ was resurrected Sunday morning, And if you ask them, they won't question it.
Mm-mm.
Because the church, for all these years, has taught and believes implicitly that Jesus Christ was resurrected just before dawn
on Sunday. Yep.
Now, go ahead, Don.
I see it's the bigger problem, him being put in the tomb on Friday afternoon.
Well, okay, but see, okay, but okay, I don't necessarily think we need to actually go through this.
Right.
Well, you can go to the old website and you can find a paper.
When you say old website,
it's the original.
You're talking about one that's in mothballs.
No, it's original, the original website. And again, I will put that original website up on the chat room here in just a minute.
It is actually the main website.
It is our main website, yeah. But until we can, and Don and I are talking about this and getting a computer that I can actually get everything off my old Mac and put it on this one and get started, who knows? What I am saying is this. Christmas has nothing on this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who's a Christian knows that Christ was not born on December 25. Everybody does. They just celebrate it because it's a good time of year. And it, you know, they have all sorts of wonderful music, and I love Christmas.
I did hear a pastor on the radio not too long ago say that he was born on December 25th.
I know. Well, okay, but there's...
I go, really?
December, the Christmas is nothing compared to if you challenge Easter. Because what was the net result of the idea that Jesus Christ was resurrected on Sunday morning? What was the net result?
Sunday sacredness.
Sabbath sacredness is now no longer appropriate. It is transferred to Sunday, and Christians worship on Sunday.
In honor of the Lord.
In honor of the Lord's day, that is.
Resurrected.
Jesus being resurrected.
Jesus never said to do that.
Well, but... Not only that, not only did he never say to do that, that is...
The resurrection didn't occur Sunday morning.
The resurrection never occurred Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So how do you get them to acknowledge that? Well, right now, you don't. You know what would happen if you went to... I'm helping my son by singing tenor part leading in the church that he's the organist choir master at. What would happen if I went up to the pastor and said, by the way, Tom, just to let you know, let me tell you about when Christ was really resurrected. Not only was he not resurrected on Sunday morning, Paul says that he wasn't even the Son of God until he was resurrected. So, you know, we've got this whole issue. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it?
Right.
He would throw me out on my keister.
More than that.
And he might even fire Zach. I'm not saying anything. Not yet. Okay. So the upshot is this. Timing to God is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Timing is everything. Because truth without an understanding of timing is meaningless. You can understand all the truth that you want.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand how that truth is applied... And it is only applied in time. If you don't know how it's applied, it doesn't matter. And that's all I'll say. I'm done.
Well, and I will add, Dennis feels strongly about that. I will add this, that the fourth commandment says nothing about going to church.
Oh, absolutely not. It doesn't.
Yeah.
So... just in case we have some listeners who think that we're advocating the fact that they need to go to church on the seventh day, we are not. Because all the command for the seventh day is to keep it holy.
Yeah.
That's it. Doesn't say go to church, doesn't say worship. It doesn't say anything other than that is the day that God requires you to rest from your labor on, is the seventh day, and that is in honor of what he did on the seventh day after creating the world, everything in it and on it and around it. There was another, Dennis read from Revelation 10, and he didn't read the verse, which I believe is 10, verse 10, where this mighty angel says, there will be
no more delay. Mm-hmm.
And that word delay does more than just infer strongly. That word delay implies time. Because you cannot delay something that has no set time for its occurrence.
That's chapter 10, verse 6.
Verse 6, okay. You cannot delay an event that has not been scheduled in time.
Right.
There is also another delay that is spoken of in Revelation, and that is Revelation 7, verse 3, right around there, where there is a mighty angel coming up from the east, the rising of the sun, has the seal of the living God, and says to the four angels who are standing at the four corners, holding back the four winds of the earth. And that angel says, hold, hold, hold. Do not release the winds until we have put the seal on the forehead of the servants of our God.
If I'm not mistaken, that should be Revelation 7:7. 7:1-3. Is it 7?
Yeah, it's 1-3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right here.
Oh, there it is. Yes, 1-3. Exactly.
So the angel would be doing something just formally,
mm-hmm,
by saying to the four angels, don't release those winds yet.
Right.
You see, the time for them to release those winds would have to have come. And the angel said, wait, don't release them yet. Why? You know, there's another delay. It's not in Revelation. It's in Matthew. Matthew 25:6, 5 or 6, where it says, but while the bridegroom was delaying, while the bridegroom was delaying, and here's a question. When you read Matthew 25:1-13, what is the event occurrence that is being described there? In other words, ultimately, what is the end of what is described in Matthew 25:1-13? The marriage feast.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end. What occurs at the marriage feast?
You'd think that it would be actually the culmination of the wedding.
Yes. Who is invited to the marriage feast?
Everyone?
One person that is not invited to the wedding feast is the bride.
Right.
She is integral.
She's the reason for the feast.
Right.
The bride is not invited to attend her own wedding feast.
And by the way, neither are the attendants. The bride's attendants and the groom's attendants. They're not invited.
Uh-uh.
They are there.
Right.
Because they are supporting the groom and supporting the bride.
So, what is the function of the bridegroom in the marriage event?
To act on behalf of the groom until the groom gets there.
What is the function of the bridegroom? Well, he's the one getting married.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He is getting married. So the event that the bridegroom is participating in is the marriage, his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's delaying anything, and when it says while the bridegroom is delaying, what would he be delaying?
Does his father have
his wedding, the actual ceremony.
Well, yeah. See, Suzette is asking a question. Well, is he delaying because his father hasn't told him yet? But if his father hasn't said, this is the date you can go get your bride, then how can the bridegroom delay that time?
Hmm.
See, if he doesn't know what time and the father's not going to reveal it to anybody, how can anybody be delaying the date?
Can't be a delay if you don't know the time.
And if it is being delayed, wouldn't that mean that the date has already
been established and and gone?
Right.
It's already in the past.
Cool.
Now, what is the one thing that any bridegroom wants to have happen?
Get married.
Get his bride.
He wants to get married.
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose for all of this. Mm-hmm. He wants to get married more than anything else. He loves his bride to be, and he wants to marry her. Why would he delay it any longer? I mean, wouldn't he? But if the day comes, he's going there. He's going to pick up his bride, and he's taking her to the marriage feast. They will be married. And that is what he wants more than anything else. Why would he delay it?
He would only delay it if she's not ready.
Ah, you see, you need to understand how it works. If he goes to her house to pick her up, to take her to the marriage.
And she's not ready?
And she's not dressed and ready to go immediately. It is immediately. He doesn't go and sit down in the front room while she gets herself all ready. It's time to get married. He goes there. She has to be ready. And they go to the marriage feast right now. He doesn't even go inside. She has to meet him at the door and off they go. If she is not ready.
The wedding's off.
The wedding is not delayed. It is off forever.
Wow.
Right.
So.
Is timing important?
Timing is critical to the marriage.
Absolutely.
Is critical to the marriage.
Huh.
And understanding that
critical. Apropos of timing, you can go to our chat room. You can go there, and I have posted the link to the 7 Rules for Prophetic Interpretation. I've also posted the link to the Sabbath Resurrection of Jesus and corroborating evidence from the United States Naval Observatory on exactly the year, the date, and the time when Christ was crucified.
And please keep Spirit of Truth Ministry in your prayers.
We are.
Especially this year.
Especially right now in the next week or two. So, well, that was exciting, wasn't it? Yeah, please, go ahead. There's a minute.
Okay, we've got students out there. And I would like to just throw this out to you. Back in the 1960s, it was a major, major archaeological find found in Syria. And it's called Ebla, E-B-L-A. And the Syrians have become very, very protective of this. And what's so incredible about Ebla is that everything's written on clay tablets. It's not parchment like the Dead Sea Scrolls. And they simply are virtually letting nobody look at it. And I've read it, and it's been said that if they allowed the world to look at this, it would upset the whole religious world.
Mm-hmm. I bet you.
So the question I've asked people is, what could you say that will upset the whole religious world? That's something to think
about. That's
right. Well, so, students out there, look up Ebla. It's a major thing. And also bear in mind, that's probably a reason why we're in Syria.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus. We'll see you then.